Up to $700 million. That's how much credit reporting company Equifax will have to pay for the massive data breach back in 2017. Authorities announced the record settlement on Monday, which will end multiple federal probes, most state attorneys' general inquiries, and pending class action lawsuits. 147 million consumers had their personal data exposed, including all important Social Security numbers, in one of the largest breaches ever.
He tries never to be pictured in public, but it seems investors would be happy to see more of Ted Baker founder Ray Kelvin. He quit the British fashion retailer in March over allegations of misconduct. Now media reports suggest he is poised for a comeback. The Sunday Times says Kelvin will support a private equity buyout. That would take the firm private under existing management.
Tech shares reached for the stars in China Monday. Stocks on China's new Nasdaq-style board for homegrown tech firms up as much as 400% for the day. 16 of the first 25 companies more than doubled their IPO prices on the so-called star market. Numbers were way beyond what investors predicted, and buying was so manic it tripped exchange circuit breakers designed to calm frenzied activity.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's July the 23rd, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day here getting underway. With lots going on in the world of business, we'll try to cover as much of it as we can this hour, including some headlines coming up on the program today. Mary Wisniewski, transportation reporter at the Chicago Tribune, will be with us to talk about a few transportation issues in the city, including Southsiders who might be getting lower Metra fares soon. Mary will join us momentarily this morning. First off the bat here on the Opening Bell this morning, a little bit later in the program, a couple of questions about the debt ceiling this morning. Also, some GDP data coming out today, some economic data points that are highlighting today's business investment news. And a new guest will join us this morning, Susan Sylvester, Chief Investment Officer at Murphy & Sylvest. So that'll be at about 5:38 this morning. We'll also ask her some portfolio questions as well. So stay tuned for our guest this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell will ring today after stocks finished higher yesterday ahead of a busy week of corporate earnings reports. At the closing bell, the Dow gained 18 points. The NASDAQ was up 58 points. And the S&P added about 8 points at the close. This morning, futures markets are pointing toward a higher open at the opening bell. Dow futures are up 68 points, nearly a quarter of a percent. S&P futures up 7 points, nearly a quarter of a percent. NASDAQ futures up nearly a third, up about 24 points. As we look around the rest of the world, markets in Europe are generally in the green as well. In Germany, up nearly 143 points on the DAX, more than a percent. In London, up nearly a half a percent. In France, up more than a half a percent. And in Asia, markets mostly in the green as well. In Tokyo, market finishing there higher by nearly a percent, up 204 points on the Nikkei. In Hong Kong, up nearly a third. In China, the Shanghai, up nearly 13 points, which is about a half a percent. And oil this morning is at $56.26 a barrel, which is just up about 4 cents. A couple of big stories as we begin this morning. The Trump administration is about to propose a rule change that would drop more than 3 million Americans from the food stamp program. The administration says the change will propose today would cut about $2.5 billion a year in federal spending from the program. The change would affect 43 states where people who receive benefits from the temporary assistance for needy families automatically become eligible for food stamps. The administration wants to require people who get benefits to have their income and assets reviewed to determine if they're eligible for those benefits and food stamps. Microsoft will pay more than $25 million to settle federal charges that it made improper payments to bribe government officials in four foreign countries. The settlement the Justice Department announced yesterday requires Microsoft Hungary to pay nearly $7 million in a criminal fine. Microsoft will also pay more than $16.5 million to settle civil charges by the Securities and Exchange Commission. The SEC accused Microsoft of improper activities in Hungary, Saudi Arabia, Thailand, and Turkey. And CarMax is announcing a home delivery option. Car buyers can now purchase a car without leaving the comfort of their home. The option includes a no-obligation test drive, and if you like the car, you can purchase it on the spot. Customers can opt to do financing online and then complete the purchase in person for expedited pickup. The program has rolled out in Virginia already, and CarMax says it should be available in most markets across the country by February. Let's begin this morning with some transportation news. Mary Wisniewski is with us. She's the transportation reporter at the Chicago Tribune. A couple of big stories this morning, including possibility of some lower Metra fares. Mary, good morning. Welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
This sounds like good news. Southside riders specifically might be seeing some lower Metra fares. What are we talking about?
That's right. This is something that's been talked about for a couple of decades, to use the Metro Electric line and the Rock Island line to have cheaper service to provide another transit option in areas that don't have easy access to the L. The red line of the CTA stops at 95th Street, so if you live south of there, you might have to take multiple buses in order to get that to downtown and shopping. So this has been proposed for a couple of reasons. One, to help people on this on the far south side and in the far south suburbs get to work, but also to help build ridership on those lines. There's been almost 6 million fewer rides since 2002 on the Metro Electric and the Rock Island. And if you lower fares, you can increase the number of riders, but there's going to be some kind of tipping point that Metro has to get to in order to get enough riders to make up for the loss of revenue from the lowered fares. And so Cook County is proposing providing a subsidy that would allow them to have this, and also make up for some of the loss of the riders that would be experienced by the CTA and PACE and the South Shore Railroad. So that's the proposal they're looking at right now. Cook County doesn't know what the timeline is going to be and also doesn't know what the size of the subsidy is going to be.
I'm guessing some people have been estimating that, though. Talk to us a little bit first about what the discount might be, and is there even a ballpark number of what that subsidy might look like?
Sure. The plan, this is outlined in a new mobility study that was prepared by the county, is to lower the fares on the Metro Electric and the Rock Island line within the city to $2.50. So that would be the same fare as the L, from current Metro fares of $4 to $5.50. And there's an idea that fares would also be lowered for the South Suburban destinations within Cook County, but the exact amounts haven't been determined yet. And I did push Cook County to see if we could find the amount of the subsidy, but so far we don't have a number on that yet.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you mentioned that this involves the city, so this would be even involves perhaps Northside Metro users, right? I mean, that's anybody who picks up Metro in the city.
No, this would only involve these two lines.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
If I live on the northwest side, and when I decide to take Metro, I pay $4. So this would only affect these two lines. Ridership has been growing on a lot of the other Metro lines, and they've actually had some problems with crowding on some of the other lines, so it would be difficult for them to lower fares on there because there wouldn't be the capacity for them. But there is capacity on the Metro Electric line and on the Rock Island line. And the Metro Electric, it has a lot of potential for growth, Cook County points out, because there's no freight interference on that line. That's Metro's, they have free run there. And it also has the railroad's newest equipment, so there's not a lot of breakdowns. So there is room for more riders on that line.
Mary, I think a big question I have listening to you explain some of this is, well, if the riders are riding in other parts of the area and they're paying full price and it's not a big deal, is this just a price issue that's affecting these lines?
Well, the issue that there's a transit desert in places of the city like the southeast side around Lake Calumet, and one of the issues that Cook County looked at is that South Cook County, even though it has fewer transit options, is also more transit dependent. There's more children in single parent households. There's more disabled people. There's more people without cars. And so the thinking is that this is an area that needs some transit help.
Under this scenario, reading some of the details of this, so the Venture cards could be used eventually to provide free transfers between PACE, Metra, and CTA. So that's part of the deal, too. I'm guessing there would probably be a big publicity push, too, to raise more interest in these lines.
Right, exactly. Now, the venture part of it is that that's going to be a tricky part to work out technologically, because right now you can't transfer using your venture card from Metra to the CPA or from, and so they're going to have to work out exactly how to do that, and then they'd have to let people know, hey, we're doing this, and it might be that this happens in stages where they lower the fares within the city first, and then they do the venture transformation and to allow people to do the transfers. So, you know, the timing of this is still to be worked out. One thing that could affect it is that there's a bill before the State House right now that would cut Metro Electric District fares. And if passed, that bill could take effect on June 1st, 2020. So that could speed up the timeline here. And advocates for this are hoping that the bill does pass because they feel like they need a sense of urgency, because this is something that's been talked about for a long time. But this is the first time we've had a definite plan to make it happen.
Talking about some transportation issues, specifically Metra talking with Cook County, the CTA, and PACE about lowering fares on Metra Electric and Rock Island line, a subsidy perhaps coming from Cook County for all of this. And Mary, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about that. I know there have been some tightening of budgets in the Cook County government. Without knowing what this subsidy is going to be, how positive do you think that's going to go over among commissioners who are already looking at a tight budget?
Well, we know that Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle is a strong transit supporter, and the idea behind this is that it would benefit the county overall by helping a part of the county that has seen a population drop and also seen an increase in the unemployment rate. And so those are the sorts of arguments that Cook County is putting forward, that this would be growth overall for the county, and also that it would overall increase transit ridership. Because if you can get, they figure that this could increase Metro ridership by as much as a third, 84,000 riders. Some of that would come out of people not taking the CTA or people not taking PACE, but they figure that overall transit ridership would increase by 48,000 people, and that there would be a revenue increase of almost $12 million for transit. And so the county does have an interest in getting people onto transit and getting people off the roads and getting people to jobs and to shopping. And so the argument would be that there would be an overall boost for the economy and for the region if they can get people this additional source of transit for themselves.
Yeah, so this sounds more like not necessarily an expense, but perhaps an investment.
Yeah, it's an investment. The idea is it's a boost, and that once you get enough people to be taking Metra, that that there will be a tipping point at which there won't necessarily be a need for a subsidy, that the thing will start paying for itself. The problem is that Metra, it's not like that they've been against this experiment all this time, but they didn't feel like they can afford to try it, and so they needed to have this. They need to have this subsidy in order to give it a try.
Yeah, you mentioned Metra and being able to afford it or not. Metra has raised, I think, fares, six times over the last 8 years? A lot of people.
That's right.
A lot of people are, that's not going over well with a lot of folks. Talk to us about Metra's bigger problems in terms of getting people to continue riding and also being able to afford it.
Right. Well, Jim Derwinski, who's the CEO of Metra, told me that one of the reasons that there's been a drop in ridership on the Metra Electric and on the Rock Island lines is because of these fare increases, and people have just decided that it's too expensive. They've dropped out of the system. Metra last year decided not to raise fares because they realized that they were going to start seeing drops in ridership. Metra has also had problems with delays on their lines, in part because of problems with old equipment. Some of their cars on the other lines, not in Metra Electric, but on lines like the BNSF, they have equipment that goes back to the 1950s. The old CEO of Metra has joked that some of these cars could go into retirement. They're so old. If they were human beings, they could start collecting Social Security. Right now we have the state capital bill that's going to allow for some improvements on Metra. They're going to allow for the new rolling stock. It's going to allow for some improvements to bridges. And so that should increase the viability of Metra for people, and it should help there to be less delays and better cars and better equipment. In the meantime, as you said, six of these last 8 years, Metro has had to raise fares, and that's turned some people off.
Mary, what's the timetable on all of this? When might we see another development in this?
There's no timetable right now for, you know, when this is going to happen, but there is a definite plan right now. One thing, as I said, that could affect the timetable is this bill before the Congress would be State House, which would lower metro fares on the Metro Electric District. If that passes, that would take effect June 1st, 2020. And so if that passes, that means that, you know, the Metro and PACE and CTA and Cook County would have to get their ducks in a row by that time in order to lower the fares within the city.
All right, Mary, a good conversation as always. We appreciate you being on with us this morning.
Thanks so much, Steve. Have a great day.
You too. Mary Wisniewski, transportation reporter and getting around columnist at the Chicago Tribune.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. It's a busy week for company earnings. We'll also get GDP numbers later in the week ahead of a Fed meeting that will likely see a cut in interest rates. Joining us this morning to talk a little bit about some of this, Susan Silvest, Chief Investment Officer at Murphy and Silvest in Dallas. Susan, good morning. Welcome to WGN and The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great having you on with us. We appreciate you taking some time out before we get into our discussion about some of this stuff. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do there in Dallas.
I am, as you said, the Chief Investment Officer and founding partner of Murphy and Silvest. I have a business partner called Tom Silvest. And Tom and I run a registered investment advisory firm here in Dallas. Although, I must confess, I am an Indiana girl.
All right. Well, so, and the breadth of experience, you've been doing this for quite a while, so you know what you're talking about.
I have been doing this for quite some time. I graduated from Indiana University in 1981, so you can do the math. I've been in this industry for almost all of that period of time. So, yes, a lot of experience.
Well, we're going to try to use some of your experience this morning because I think there's a lot of folks listening who are looking at this week. Lots of big things going on. I want to mention first the GDP. We'll get a look at GDP numbers later this week, and all of this, of course, comes ahead of the Fed meeting. Do you think, first of all, what do you think we'll see on GDP, and what impact do you think it's going to have on whether or not the Federal Reserve cuts interest rates?
Well, I don't know exactly. I'm not a great forecaster. That's not what I'm looking at. I'm looking at the current events. So the GDP numbers will probably come out in line with expectation. That is sort of the mantra of where we stand. But how does it affect the interest rate environment? Well, the interest rate environment, as the Fed chairman continues to state, they're trying to be independent. They're trying to take all of the variables, whether it's the GDP, whether it's inflation, where do we stand on current interest rates? And then there is that one anomaly, which is we are in the third year of an administration who is fostering the economy and doing what they should, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, this is what occurs. During that third year of the administration, they try to position the economy in a very positive light. So there are undertones that are a little more soft than the hard numbers that we see. We currently have inflation at such a remarkable rate of 1.6. So inflation is definitely under that 2% mark, which leads me to question it. We refer to it as a head scratcher as to why the Fed would want to lower interest rates, cut them. But there is about 100% of sediment across all of the pundits. But that's exactly what may occur.
Yeah, so I think I've heard a lot of, and I'm sure you have too, and other people listening across the last week or so, this idea that this would be an insurance cut, an insurance or a hedge against what may be coming. And what may be coming could be a downturn in the economy. Talk to us a little bit about that.
There is an expectation and that the economy has been doing so well that it will stagnate. And you're going to probably see some slower numbers in the second quarter. And part of the stagnation that we have is because the inventory levels have become low. So we need a quarter to start to restock our inventories to increase the supply and the demand. So we will probably see a slowing in the second quarter. That's the forecast. And so the numbers that will come out to support that. And that will be perceived as somewhat of an issue. People will focus on the short term of that particular position. But how does that impact what happens long term? That's really what's important to people, because they want to be involved in what is happening today, but they also want to ask that question, how does that impact me personally and my future and my investment portfolio? And so one of the cautionary remarks that we make in our firm is that these things are going to occur. We are in the third year of a current administration's reign, and he is positioning to run once again. And historically, that means that our economy, no matter what is occurring, will be somewhat shored up. And that is the insurance marker of lowering interest rates.
Susan, if we're in that position, let's say I'm one of your investors, what would you tell me about what I should do right now? Should I be making any nervous moves in terms of restructuring my portfolio right now, or should I hold pat, just sort of watch things unfold?
That is a great question. And one of my mentors many years ago said to me, the answer to what should I do with my portfolio question is, it depends. So, and I know the audience generally doesn't appreciate that response, because what happens is, if you are 20 years old or you've just graduated and you're, for example, 30 years old, there's no reason to rush to making a nervous decision. If you're more quote unquote mature and you're either in distribution phase of your life or you are approaching retirement and making distributions from your portfolio, those portfolios inside our firm, we are a little heavier on the balance of that particular portfolio. So we may have pulled back from equities just a bit, but that's more driven by the client's need versus what's happening in the economy. For example, if someone is moving into a distribution phase of their life and they wake up this morning and they open, they're listening to Fox or they're listening to CNN. Sorry about that. But if they're listening to the television and they're focused on what is being distributed over that, they may feel short-term discomfort. But what you really need is a portfolio that's designed to meet your needs, even if, and fill in the blank, even if Trump doesn't win, even if they lower interest rates. What should you be doing? So if they're more mature, we have pulled back a little bit and made the portfolio a little more conservative. You have to also be careful, because in our financial planning side of our industry and our business with Murphy and Celeste, you must be very careful that a client does not have a drastic tax impact. So it's a balancing act, of trying to help them not incur too many taxes as well.
So as we watch this week, corporate earnings come into a better view, and we watch more of those come out. What will we be watching? What should we be watching for in some of those corporate earnings that we're seeing now?
Corporate earnings have been doing so extraordinarily well. I mean, they have benefited from lower taxes, lower interest rates. They have really benefited quite a bit. So corporate earnings, my forecast is they will continue to be strong. Now, corporations are having the same, large companies and small companies out there are all having the same problem, and that is the low unemployment rate. Finding quality people who want to work, that has become, especially in the fast food industry, any of the food service type of industries, they're having such a struggle, and that may impact their productivity. But I still think we're going to see strong earnings, especially with the budget, the bipartisan agreement to raise the debt ceiling.
Part of the equation here is too, what happened with the trade issues. That doesn't seem like it's going to be solved anytime soon. So that's one of the things we need to factor in as well.
Agreed. We do have a client who has a large manufacturing in China, company. And the challenge is his his revenue stream is so small that when he has to pay the tariffs to get his industry over here, it's just debilitating. It consumed all of his profit margin. So that you are seeing U.S. companies being impacted by the tariffs, and that is a challenge. We do not seem to have a forecast of when that or how that might be resolved. You're absolutely right.
Well, and Susan, a good conversation this morning. We appreciate you spending some time with us this morning, and hopefully we can do this again. We appreciate your experience and your analysis this morning.
You're most welcome. Have a wonderful day.
Susan Silvest, Chief Investment Officer at Murphy & Silvest, based in Dallas. You can find them online at murphysilvest.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street this morning. Dow futures are up 80 points, nearly a quarter of a percent, nearly a third now, actually. S&P and NASDAQ futures are up about a third as well this morning. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. The weekly crop progress reports yesterday, not much change, no major surprises. Corn was maybe the exception, as the Department of Agriculture said corn in good to excellent condition is now at 57%. That's down one percentage point from last week. But soybeans and spring wheat crop progress results unchanged in the report, holding firm at 54% and 76% respectively. Meanwhile, looking at the cattle trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange yesterday, feeder cattle futures moved upward as corn futures fell, and traders hope that feed costs will continue to remain under pressure. The October lean hog contract up 27 cents a hundredweight for the day. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Tuesday, July the 23rd. This day's economic reports focus on the housing industry. The U.S. Home Price Index for May will be out today. Analysts are forecasting a gain of 0.3% in prices. The report on existing home sales for June coming out mid-morning. The experts see sales of existing homes falling 3.6% after increasing 2.5% the previous month. Also on the calendar today, we'll get a look at the Red Book, the FHFA House Price Index. Also coming out today, the Richmond Fed Manufacturing Index is due. And on the earnings calendar today, a couple of big companies reporting earnings already out. Coca-Cola, Harley-Davidson, the ticker symbol HOG, Harley-Davidson reporting revenue miss, but earnings per share in line with analyst expectations. Also, Kimberly-Clark, Lockheed Martin, Chipotle, Snap, UBS, Visa, all reporting quarterly earnings today. Plenty of things to move the markets on this Tuesday, July the 23rd.